From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The 90s financial bubble brought with it big dreams of retirement. Retire young and retire rich was the mantra of the raging bull market. But now the bubble has burst, and millions of Americans are faced with a hard new reality. Retire later and maybe never retire at all. This hour On Point, a reality check on what it will take for you to retire. But first tonight, Wall Street calculates the potential impact of war with Iraq. Talk of U.S. military strikes against Baghdad sent oil prices skyrocketing earlier this week to an 18-month high. The Bush administration is this week soft-peddling plans to overthrow Saddam Hussein. But stock market investors are already factoring in the war option. Roland Jones is business reporter with MSNBC.com. I asked him how Wall Street investors have responded to the administration's talk of war.
They're getting prepared, really. The people I've been speaking to for the article I wrote have been busy devising ways that they can profit from a potential invasion of Iraq. So they've been looking at sectors that might do well, like the defense sector, and also oil stocks, because the price of oil is likely to spike if there is an invasion or any kind of conflict in the Middle East, and so that's going to benefit oil-related companies.
What is the overall impact of a war with Iraq, if it comes to be, anticipated to be on the U.S. stock market?
That's interesting, actually. Back in 1990, when Iraq invaded Kuwait, the stock market obviously took it quite hard and dropped quite sharply. But by the time Desert Shield had turned into Desert Storm, we were already rallying and the market had already turned back and was heading higher. So I think for this potential invasion of Iraq, it's slightly different, obviously. Mm-hmm. But in this case, there might well be a short-term shock, but it's already really priced into the market because there's been so much discussion about it. The stock market tends to anticipate these things and price them in. And so some people are saying that there could be a short-term shock, obviously a shock to consumer confidence, which could dent the economy. But as long as this thing doesn't go on too long, the stock market should be able to recover quite easily.
So it could set the market back, perhaps on the basis of consumer spending taking a pause as a war begins. I suppose that happened in 1990 and might very well happen again.
Yep.
Then you say longer term, people are looking to possible gains in particular sectors. Energy would all obviously be a big issue if there's a war being fought around the world's largest oil fields.
Exactly, yeah, that's right. We've already seen oil prices this week spike. I think they went up to $30, and that could go high. Any hint of any difficulties in the Middle East always results in spiking oil prices.
But we're also told, I guess what's obvious, the U.S. government would have to crank up its spending on defense and military supplies and everything that goes along with that. How big a sector is that on Wall Street, and how much attention is being paid to it because of the threat of war against Iraq?
Quite a lot. But I think there already was quite a lot of attention in this sector because the Bush administration has been seen spending a lot more on U.S. defense. And so I think some of the people I was speaking to for the article were saying they were already buying up defensive stocks. They bought them when the Bush administration came into power. And now they're holding on to them, and they might well sell them if a potential conflict happens and make the most of that opportunity.
What sectors might be hit by war on Iraq? Are there particular industries that Wall Street analysts are expecting might see their stocks hurt by war?
Yes. If there's an impact on consumer confidence, if people are sitting at home watching television, watching the events unfold, people on Wall Street expect consumer stocks, perhaps auto companies or consumer-related companies, retailers, to take a hit.
Have we already seen some buyers getting rid of these stocks in expectation of possible war?
Not at the moment, but I think that people are still waiting to see what's going to happen.
So some sectors could be hurt, some may be helped, but the oil price issue must be a threat overall to the economy. If somehow things would go in such a way that oil prices are significantly stepping up and staying up, presumably that's something Wall Street would be very unhappy about.
Yes, I think so. I think that's definitely something people are worried about. I think that oil affects so many different kinds of companies. It's a factor in the cost of transportation. Plastics companies use oil to make things. I mean, it's such an important part of the U.S. economy that yes, I think that will be a big worry for Wall Street if there is a prolonged conflict.
This week, we've had the markets moving back up and a lot of attention being paid to that. Is there concern on Wall Street that a move toward war could set the market back, could derail it, could make a strong recovery impossible or significantly delay it?
I imagine that that would certainly happen. There would be a worry about that, particularly because the consumer has been such an important part of the recovery in the economy recently, that if consumers decide to keep the wallet on the hip, then it could be a big problem for the U.S. economy, which is now struggling to recover.
Roland Jones, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Roland Jones is a business reporter with MSNBC.com. He spoke with me earlier today from New York. We're talking tonight about the new reality of retirement in America. The ever-expanding 90s Wall Street bubble encouraged Americans to invest their retirement savings in the market. But when the bubble burst, millions of people saw those savings collapse with it. Our guest tonight says it will take the average U.S. household 30 years to recoup the market losses of the past 2 years. But many Americans don't have 30 years. A generation of baby boomers, once looking forward to golden years on the golf course, is having to rethink retirement. For working families in their 30s or 40s, saving for retirement may now mean having to make significant changes to their lifestyles today. Listeners, how prepared are you for retirement? Are you on track with adequate savings? Do you even know what it will take? Are you rethinking when you'll retire, if you'll retire? Join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me tonight is Christian Weller, an economist at the Economic Policy Institute. His new study, Retirement Out of Reach, was just published yesterday. Good evening and welcome, Christian Weller.
Good evening, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. Christian Weller, you conclude in your report, and it's not a very sunny report, you conclude that the average household in America has no statistical chance of amassing enough wealth for an adequate retirement. That sounds terrible. What do you mean by the average household, and what do you mean by an adequate retirement? What's the situation?
Well, what we mean by adequate retirement is usually a standard as and the amount of savings that will allow a household upon retirement at age 65 to replace about 80% of the income they had before retirement. So that's part of Social Security, and then the rest would be made up with pension plans, 401ks, private savings.
It's retiring with about 80% of what people were making in their working life.
That is correct.
Of their final salary, is that what you mean by that, Christian Weller?
That's usually, you take the average of the last few years,
okay.
Which at that point usually income growth slows down a little bit.
And you're saying the average household has no chance of doing that?
Well, the average household never reached adequate retirement even before that. The finding after I did the calculations, mm-hmm. I was taken aback a little bit myself, and then I double-checked the numbers. And what pretty much every study has concluded for the 1990s, that even during the boom, the typical household didn't reach an adequate standard of retirement savings. And primarily, one of the main reasons for that is that as stock portfolios were running up, people were saving less. They were actually spending more money. And the other big part of the equation is that people were using their portfolio paper wealth, essentially, mm-hmm. to go out and borrow more money. So that money actually was already spent to some degree.
So step back, Christian Weller, and describe for us, how would you compare Americans' expectations of retirement, as you perceive them, with the reality of what most households will confront?
Well, I think at this point, people have come back to somewhat more realistic levels of expectations. The late 1990s saw a flood of stories where people were telling newspaper reporters that they were planning on retiring in their late 30s and their early 40s, given what their stock portfolios were doing. That clearly was just a reflection of the giddy bubble economy of the late 1990s. I think we're coming back to much more realistic scenarios. People now understand that given what kind of savings they have and the savings path they're on, they probably will have to work well into their 60s in order to reach an adequate standard of retirement. Now, let me add to that, though, that for many people, that then is not an option. Many people are already experiencing bad health problems in their late 50s. So working well into their 60s is often not an option. So then they're caught between a rock and a hard place because they either are forced to work longer in bad health or retire with inadequate savings, so this, an inadequate retirement.
So this glib assumption, as unwelcome as it may be, that people can just go on working to keep their income up, may not coincide with their health or their capacity to work.
That is correct. One thing, it often sounds, it's a good soundbite when people say, like, we live longer, so we're in better health. That equation just doesn't work.
What do you mean by that?
Well, we're living longer, that's correct. Clearly, nobody doubts that. But the health of older workers has not seen any market improvements over the last 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. The main thing is, the reason why we're living longer is because we've made inroads in some fatal diseases. We have gotten really good better at managing some diseases that affect people really in their 80s. That has nothing to do with somebody who is in their late 50s or 60s.
And whether they'll be in shape to bag groceries or mop up the elementary school.
That is correct. And you're touching on some of these new service sector jobs where we have seen a lot of health problems. In particular, as you were saying, janitors, but also nurses, waiters and waitresses, flight attendants is another group, where we have seen a proliferation of health problems where people really aren't able to work any longer, who have such functional problems in their functional abilities that they can no longer work.
Christian Weller, I want to ask you, I'm looking here at a report from Charles Schwab, and of course they have an interest in people saving. But they did a survey of Americans age 45 to 65 with household incomes of at least $75,000. And 64% of the survey group said they were confident that they would have enough money for a comfortable retirement. Then the Schwab people would give them a reality check about what retirement actually costs, and that percentage that felt confident tumbled to 32%. What's your anecdotal experience in talking with Americans about retirement? Are people at grips with what it takes to require at what most would consider a comfortable income?
I don't think many people know how much it actually takes to save for an adequate retirement income, for a comfortable income. Let's take a number. If you want to, let's say you make $60,000 just before you retire,
okay,
and you want to maintain that kind of, or you make a little bit over $60,000, you want to say, okay, well, you want to have $60,000 and maintain your standard of living for and never run out of money in retirement,
mm-hmm,
you actually need about $1 million now.
You need $1 million in the bank to retire with an annual income of $60,000.
That is correct.
And that's, let's see, that's if you were intending to retire when?
That's if you intend to retire at, let's say, 62.
So someone who's 40 today or 50 today should be angling to have $1 million. It must make a difference how old you are now.
That is correct. I mean, if the $60,000 is your goal in absolute numbers,
mm-hmm,
then the number really doesn't change that much. It only changes with life expectancy increases, and they don't increase that much.
So we're talking there about $1 million in cash in the bank in addition to Social Security?
Well, if you want to have $60,000 in addition, if you want to have $60,000 including Social Security,
mm-hmm,
you're probably looking at about half of that, about, mm-hmm, $500,000.
What percentage of Americans have something like $500,000 ready to go for retirement? What percentage have $1 million?
The very, very few. We're talking probably the top 5% of people. Even for those who are nearing retirement, we're not talking more than 10% of households.
As you describe it, it sounds like we're headed toward some kind of crisis here.
Well, I mean, we've had the same crisis. I mean, these numbers are not any new. This is the same picture that we've seen for the past 30 years. What the crisis is that we have let the system go on like this, that the pension system, the retirement system, and have ignored the facts for the last 20, 30 years. And I think now with this big crash on the stock market coming together with a recession and a slow recovery, now is the time for us to really rethink what we're going to do about retirement and how we handle retirement policy.
A lot of people must be rethinking it right now. We're taking a reality check on American retirement tonight. Do you know what your own retirement prospects are? Are you on track for an adequate requirement? What does an adequate retirement mean to you? You can join our conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're taking a reality check on American retirement tonight. Has your retirement nest egg been whacked by the stock market bust? Did you ever have a nest egg? Have you been forced to change your retirement plans to keep working? Do you know what it's going to take to let you retire? You can join our conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight by Christian Weller. He's a macroeconomist at the Economic Policy Institute and author of a new study, Retirement Out of Reach. And now by David Ray, who's president of the Profit-Sharing 401k Council of America and author of Take Control of Your 401k. Good evening and welcome, David Ray.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's good to have you. David Ray, you've heard Christian Weller giving us the top of the new report he's put out on retirement prospects. He portrays a gap of such magnitude in America's preparation for retirement that we didn't get a chance to talk with this yet, but we will, that he calls on the government to think about stepping in with new programs to support Americans in their retirement. He says private savings just aren't going to do it. What's your sense of how well prepared Americans are now for retirement and how well people looking at retirement 10, 15 years, 20 years out may be able to build a nest egg given what's happened in the market?
Well, there's no question that we're at a time of incredible change. If you think about it, the typical human being basically works until he or she dies. And in the last generation, we've changed all that. People.
You're saying the typical human being on the planet.
On the planet, forever. Mm-hmm. Currently, in most places and throughout history, people worked until they died. And suddenly, in the last generation or two, we've introduced a whole new concept that people are going to live a very long time. There's going to be a period of inactivity where they're not actually taking care of themselves financially by working, for many, many years.
And that's a very firm presumption at this point, that people will spend 10, 20, 30 years retired and not working.
Yeah, young people, 90 or 100, is not unrealistic. And if that is the truth, then we have to really reappraise how we've done things in the past. We have to learn new ways of going about things, and there's no question people have to start saving and putting aside money for retirement very early. They have to do this in an intelligent manner. That's just a requirement. That is a new reality.
Of course, realities are changing right around that necessity, aren't they, David Ray? The number of people who are on pensions that are going to be there at the end of their life supported by a company or an institution has dramatically fallen in the last 10, 20 years.
Well, I mean, it's really not financially possible for most companies to provide ongoing pension plans.
And why is that? So many did for so many years.
Well, the typical pension was only for a few years. People didn't live very long. So it wasn't that expensive to provide these programs. As the lifespan moves out and the cost of, taking care of people for a longer and longer period, that makes it more and more difficult for the people to have the financial or the companies to set aside enough money. It's become more and more expensive to make that commitment. At the same time, the economic realities are that companies are forced into hitting harder and harder quarterly targets, mm-hmm. and to make these long-term commitments is just not realistic for most companies. Some large companies are still able to do so, but smaller companies have never done it, and certainly they can't do it in this kind of environment.
But the presumptions of individuals are changing rapidly, too. If you were in the market a couple of years ago and you were calculating you were going to have 18% returns on your 401k, you could quickly come to a lovely assumption of retiring at 45 or 50. Today, people have really carved back on what they're expecting to make on their savings, if they have savings, looking at 5%, 7%. That means much less accumulation and maybe no retirement or no retirement of the style envisioned.
Well, there's no question that people sold themselves on the concept that they could have somebody that they could retire at their current standard of living for 30 or 35 years and really do it easily. Save a little bit over here by putting it in the market, really not pay that much attention and learn how to really do this effectively, and it would all just happen for them. And the fact is, that's not a true statement. Realistic returns mean that you have to save more. People just, they factored in unrealistic expectations. And they also have to learn how to do it smarter. So these are important reality checks. This is a change in the human condition. People have to learn how to manage their money differently if they're going to live to be 100 years old.
David Ray, we hear that again and again, and yet it's hard for it to sink in real dollars and cents terms. Can you give us a sense, maybe a profile of a couple different types of households of what at what incomes, what kind of savings are necessary, and how does that compare with what people are actually doing?
Well, the good news is that if you look at the younger workers, We do have where there are programs where the employer is encouraging people to save.
Mm-hmm.
We've got about 50% of those people in the plans. That's certainly way up from when I was, you know, in my 20s, and nobody, and I don't want to date myself here, but nobody saved for retirement at all.
But you're just saying in a plan, 50%
right.
who are at least have a 401k
right.
open. But talk to us about dollars and cents. What does it take these days to save adequately for an adequate retirement?
Well, it really depends on your age because your time frame is going to work for you.
Can you give us some examples?
For example, a person in their 20s, clearly, if they are saving 10% of their income and they have it diversified where they can get an 8% return over time, they're going to be in very good shape.
That's 10% of pre-tax income, of total
right,
income.
Right, just 8% of your total income. If you're doing that and you're young, you're going to be in great shape. The problem is that we have a lot of people who never saved at that age now who are starting to reach the point where they have to retire, and they are going to have to save substantial portions of their income if they're going to put themselves in the position that they need to be.
10,000 baby boomers are turning 50 every day now, we read. At age 50, what kind of nest egg should a family have? You pick the income level.
Well, I mean, for a typical person, who is, moderate income person, family income at that period, that point in their career is probably, $40,000 to $60,000, and they should probably be, a person who is 50 probably needs to be, if they're in a position to do this comfortably, they need to be halfway home.
Which means
about they need to have probably about half of that $500,000 that Christian mentioned earlier.
You mean they need to have $250,000
they
saved?
They need to have serious money set aside. We know that that is not true. We know that people have not done that. And what that means is they are going to have to save a substantial amount of money for the next 15 years in order to get that done. They're going to have to save $10,000, $15,000 a year. They're going to have to put real money away.
You're talking a huge portion of an annual income. Christian Willer, I want to bring you back in here. Are Americans in any way in position to save the kind of money they need? This is Americans in their later 40s or 50s. Are they in the position to save the money required to make up for failure to save in the past and for the market's downturn?
Well, the first thing is many households simply aren't in a position to do that. To give you an example, about 20% of households right now have a household income of less than $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
40,000, we're talking, if that's your household income here, we're talking about probably the bottom 35 to 40% of households. And at the same time, a standard of living, if they're just covering the basic needs mm-hmm. for an average family, costs about $35,000 a year. So the
not much room for saving there.
Already falling short of their basic living needs in their current situation.
And
so
talk to us
really
about
no,
there's not much
no
margin there. We see that picture. Talk to us about the upper tier, just so we get that picture as well. Families making, I don't know, between $100,000 and $200,000, are they in general more firmly on track to retire at what they will think is a comfortable level?
We're probably yeah, that is true. They're probably better prepared for retirement. Obviously, the closer you are to $200,000, the better prepared you are. At the very top, again, then the situation turns around a little bit because it is a little hard to have enough savings to replace 80% of $1 million income in retirement. But for the upper middle class, they're often well prepared, often because they have inheritances, they have wealth to begin with.
Listeners, how are your own retirement plans going? We're at 1-800-423-8255. You can join us. John is on the line. Welcome, John. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just want to praise David and Christian for coming on the air and scaring some people out there who absolutely need to be scared. with the shift from pensions to 401ks, mm-hmm. you have about 85 million Americans out there who are inexperienced and ill-equipped to invest their retirement funds, and you'll have a 60-year-old woman with no spouse who will be 100% in equities, and when the equity market turns around like it has for the last 2 years, you've just postponed her retirement by about 5 years. But
so, John, how big a problem do you think we're looking at here?
I think it's a tremendous problem because here they are actively saving, which is the great part about a 401k, is you have active participation and some sort of planning.
Mm-hmm.
But once that money is taken out of the paycheck, there is little thought to where it's going and how to diversify and how to be conservative.
And yet it needs to be done right. John, thank you for your call. Christian Weller, you've written that it's going to take more than just the savings and just the 401k programs. You're saying we need to think again about employee-based systems, about mandatory savings programs, about direct or matching government contributions to retirement. I guess you mean beyond Social Security. Are those things necessary? Are they possible?
They're possible. That's clearly, I can talk about the numbers. Let me go through the two big problems, or the three big problems as I see them in the retirement system. The first one is many employers just simply don't sponsor a plan, so the employee just doesn't have the same access to a 401k, or doesn't have no access to it.
You mean let alone contributing their own matching dollars to
right.
it, they don't even have a mechanism for employee contributions.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. So the employee cannot take advantage of the tax savings there. The other part is the tax savings under 401k plans are skewed towards higher income earners because it's pre-tax contributions. So there's really not that much of an incentive for lower income earners to really contribute to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where the biggest problems are for the low income, moderate income families. And the third one is we've been promoting these 401k plans as the ultimate saving grace here, and I think that's wrong. I mean, they're extremely risky. They're savings plans. They're not pensions. They don't carry any insurance mechanisms. And we need to make them safer, as the Enron debacle has shown. The other thing is, I think,
how can you make them safer? They're largely in stock market shares, which are inherently come with risk.
That is correct, but if you have all your eggs in one basket, let's say you have 80-90% in employer stock, that is too risky. I mean, we've mentioned diversification several times.
Mm-hmm.
Many people just simply don't know. They're not well informed. The government has a clear vested interest in here in stepping in. We spend over $100 billion subsidizing pension plans each year. I think it's completely correct to say, okay, well, we're going to regulate these, and you have to diversify. You cannot have more than 10% in one particular asset.
Let me add this. Sure.
David was saying earlier that employer plans, especially for smaller employers, traditional pension plans are too expensive for smaller employers.
David Ray said those are history. They're not coming back, he says. They're unaffordable.
They're not coming back. Well, they may be coming back. Politicians are looking at them again because they are actually a good deal for both sides, in particular so-called multi-employer plans. There's two plans I'm familiar with somewhat for car mechanics out on the West Coast,
mm-hmm.
one in Seattle, one in the Bay Area, that are managed by the employers together with the International Association of Machinists, the Machinist Union. They cover about 20,000 mechanics. They're all small employers. They're very good in terms of their cost, their rate of return, in terms of the guaranteed benefits they offer.
So they're pooling their resources for a guaranteed pension, but for most Americans, that's probably not going to pull their situation out of the fire. Betsy's on the line. Welcome, Betsy. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I have a question which the speakers tonight so far have not addressed.
Okay.
And that is, you know, how do we take inflation into account in this?
In planning and saving for retirement.
Yeah, because you're saying, you know, if you want to have an income of that corresponds to your $16,000 now, that you need a certain amount of money, but I don't hear that calculation includes allowing for the fact that prices may double in the next, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
How do you take inflation into account in these calculations? Because I'm just not hearing that.
It's a good question. David Ray, explain to us how inflation factors into assumptions about saving for retirement.
Right. Inflation is really critical. It wasn't such an important issue when people only live 3 or 4 years after retirement and their assets basically covered that period. But now if you're going to live for 30 years, even a 1% or 2% inflation rate can grind down your return and grind down your savings.
We were talking earlier about $1 million nest egg being sufficient to support a retirement annual income of $60,000. Does that sound like the sort of formula that has inflation figured in?
Well, I think it has it over-figured in. I mean, first off, Social Security is going to be there, and that is an index benefit that's going to provide about a third of the benefit. So what you're looking for is, or a third of the replacement income.
Mm-hmm.
So what you need is you have to have some of your money probably set up in some kind of stream of income or some kind of process where you have some kind of fixed kind of flow, but you still have to have some of your money invested in a way that offsets inflation. And that's why you're going to need a complete kind of portfolio management. It's going to probably include some equity
in the stock market.
Yeah, in the stock market all the way. The stock market, we have a current correction in the stock market, but the American economy has been strong for 200 years. The overall trending of the stock market is up. We need to take advantage of that in these programs. If you don't, if you totally tie yourself to some kind of fixed arrangement, inflation is going to be a factor. It is going to grind you down. You need to have some equity exposure.
Nick is on the line. Welcome, Nick. You're on the air. Hello, Nick. Are you there? Don't seem to have Nick at the moment. Christian Weller, let me turn to you. I want to be sure I got this right because people listen closely. For that $60,000 retirement income, are we talking $500,000 in savings or $1 million in savings?
For the $60,000,
yes,
we're talking. If that's in addition to Social Security, we're talking about $1 million, and that is actually inflation-adjusted numbers.
Okay, so that factors in for what inflation will gradually eat out of what you can pull from that that nest egg over time.
Or it means like you take every year a little bit more out of it in order to maintain your standard of living.
David Ray, can you see do you see a role for government to come in here and try and help shore up Americans' retirement prospects, is that just not in the picture?
No, the government has been a player all along, and we, you know, there are lots of programs. The government has last year we passed a Saver Credit, which provides special benefits for low-income savers. The government has been an important provider in this whole thing. And, of course, the government provides the Social Security program, which is a mandatory program for all Americans. And, you know, if we have to have mandatory benefits for all Americans, I mean, Social Security is the way to go. And people who advocate a government mandatory program should really think about, you know, increasing the benefits out of Social Security. It's a very efficient system. It's already in place. You know, you've got employer and employer contributions.
But it sounds like we better hope it's going to be there. We've got to take a short break. Listeners, do you know what your own retirement prospects are? Are you making lifestyle changes now to make retirement possible later? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're taking a reality check on American retirement tonight. Are you on track for an adequate retirement? Are you dealing with retirement realities or ducking them? Are you in denial about what it will take to retire? And what's the financial health of your retirement planning? You can ask our guests, will you have to work till you drop? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight by Christian Weller. He's an economist at the Economic Policy Institute and author of Retirement Out of Reach, Financial Markets Will Not Guarantee Adequate Retirement for Income for Average Households, and by David Ray, president of the Profit-Sharing 401k Council of America and author of Take Control of Your 401k. We're joined right now on the line by John. Welcome, John. You're on the air.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be talking with you. One factor that I haven't heard your guests discuss is the impact of real estate and interest rates on the retirement equation. A lot of people are looking at refinancing with lower interest rates to shorten the payback period on their mortgages and will end up with not only substantial equity in their homes, but also no mortgage payments, and certainly that's going to have a big impact on your income requirements. You could downsize, move to a less expensive neighborhood when you don't need to commute. And I'm wondering what the how that impacts, what is it, 65% of households that own their homes?
Great question, John. And, of course, we know record numbers of people are refinancing their homes and seeing record volumes of equity in those homes. Christian Weller, is there a cushion that's built in here because of the value, the equity Americans have built up in their homes?
Well, I think we have to be very careful when we look at the equity numbers that people have in their homes. We generally agree, most economists I know agree, that there is a housing bubble in most major markets. So the equity numbers we see as far as they're concerned relate to market prices really overstate the equity that people have.
What do you mean by that, that you are anticipating that somehow that equity will, apparent equity will be lost by the time people retire?
Well, I mean, it will disappear in some form or another. My best guess would be that house prices simply stop rising. We have seen house prices, for instance, in the Washington, D.C. area rise by 20% last year. That is just unrealistic. There's no grounds to expect that to keep on going.
But practically speaking, if people are living in a home today, let's say they're in their 40s or early 50s, and they've got, you know, above and beyond their mortgage, they've got $100,000, $200,000 or more in equity in that home, and many people have that these days, should they count that into their retirement savings as part of what they need for retirement or not?
They should, and actually the calculations in that report that I did include real estate wealth, and most economists nowadays do include real estate wealth in their calculations, and yet it's often not enough. The other thing is also real estate wealth is not wealth you can really live off. House is very illiquid. Often you cannot save it. There is a new financial instrument, though, that tries to address that, and that's reverse mortgages, where basically you live off your house in old age. That, however, is not very well developed at this point. It's very expensive. That's possibly a future, possibly a tool in the future. But many households simply don't own their homes. I mean, we still have home ownership rates below 70%.
I guess another question along those lines, if there ends up being this gap in savings that you describe as baby boomers hit retirement and they all start trying to sell their homes in order to cash out the equity there, could that be something that itself would send the real estate market down and make that apparent equity evaporate?
That's a possibility. I mean, that's the scenario we usually painted for the stock market, that there will be a long bear market, a downturn by the time that baby boomers sell all their assets. I think there is some reality to that, and that's probably also can be real in the real estate market, but the real estate market can be influenced by so many other factors that it's hard to predict that.
And David Ray, how about the refinancing issue? A lot of people have been refinancing the mortgage on their homes, many of them in order to pay it off earlier. Does that make a difference in people's retirement prospects?
Well, I think it makes a significant difference. Housing, you know, one of the best in retirement investments you can make is in a home, because the capital gains, if you sell your house, are not taxable. And, you know, my dad, he never was in a position where he was in an employer retirement plan. He had to save on his own. He never had very much. But he paid off his house, and he had a nice home, and he paid it off, and he sold it. He moved to a smaller home, which is actually more appropriate for his retirement, a two-bedroom, single ranch-type place, and invested the proceeds. And actually, with Social Security and the small amount of savings that he accrued on his own, he is in great shape in retirement. So the housing for people who own their own homes, and I urge people as a retirement investment, buying a home is an excellent in retirement investment, and it will make a significant difference for those people who have bought their own homes, no question about it.
Jane is on the line. Welcome, Jane. You're on the air.
Good evening.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because, like many Americans, we were in great shape, we thought, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We are down probably over 50% because, we had made some very small and we thought very wise investments a long time ago in high-tech stocks, so we haven't lost money relative to what we put in. But my husband was in high-tech, and his 401ks were mostly in high-tech, and we had investments in some social equity funds that were heavy on the tech.
So it's not turning out to be what you need to take out.
But the biggest issue for us is I don't think we're in bad shape. We still have a fairly decent amount of money. We own our home free and clear. We are both in our late 50s. He got laid off from his high-tech company in January.
Because whatever age you are, you're still part of the real economy with all the cold winds that can blow out there.
Right. And the fact is, and we know many people in the same shoes we're in, that when you're in your 50s or, God forbid, your 60s, you get laid off, it may not be an option for people to continue working until they're 67 or 68, or at least to continue at anything like what they're used to making.
You mean never mind the health issues, just the possibility of getting a job.
That's right. Absolutely. Just looking for anything besides selling computers at Best Buy or books at Barnes & Noble is... Truthfully, we know a lot of people in their 50s and 60s who are looking for the same kinds of work that our 22-year-old college son is looking for.
Jane, you're bringing us another important angle on the reality check here. Thank you for your call. Christian Weller, how about it? Even if people are physically fit and feel the need and the readiness to work, is the economy going to have jobs available for boomers as they head into their 60s, even 70s?
I think for the great mass of people, probably not. There are some niche jobs where highly experienced people are sought after and will be sought after as the baby boomers are retiring, because then in some occupations, some engineering occupations possibly, or doctors or teachers, you will see a labor shortage. But I think for the mass of people, simply the jobs won't be around, even if they could work in good health.
But that's a very scary prospect. You're saying then that if there won't even be jobs, if people need them and they can't, at that age, are they just going to be living in abject poverty?
No, I mean, they'll make ends meet with other ways. I mean, you can move in with your kids or your siblings. You just forego going to the doctor. You don't travel as much. You don't replace your clothes as often as you used to. You don't go out as often. I mean, you really make huge lifestyle changes and cut back on your expenditures wherever you can, especially if the situation that was just described hits you in your late 50s and you have to wait, even for Social Security. You have to wait till 62 till you're eligible for the first benefits. So that is a big problem.
Can I mention something here?
David Ray, please.
Yeah, I think that this caller underscores on a broader base of what's a real reality, and that is it is critical that the American economy continue to grow. If the economy is not growing, it's going to be difficult to get people across the finish line that we need them to be. And one of the great things about saving for retirement when you're young is you're providing capital to help America grow. And that is really a vital part of retirement saving. It is part of a circular process. If we have more saving and investing by young people, the economy grows, there are more jobs, there's more wealth created.
So it works two ways, you're saying, not only for your personal benefit, but to keep stoking the economy. On the other hand, a lot of people saw a lot of that investment money disappear in the last couple of years, and that's tough to watch, too. Jennifer's on the line. Welcome, Jennifer. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, my question is basically, I'm 39 years old, and I don't own a home, but I think I'm pretty much on target with my savings as far as my 401k plan. I took a little bit of a hit, but I basically put $10,000 and $14,000 into savings every year, so I'm, you know, still a good 20 years away from retirement.
That sounds great, Jennifer. Let me just ask before you go on, $10,000 to $14,000 a year out of a total income of what?
$100,000.
So you're saving a good 10% to 14%.
Part of that is what I contribute, and part of it is the matching that goes in through my employer.
All right. And your question?
My question is, not owning a home at my age right now, 20 years away from retirement, is there a detriment to that? Am I going to be behind because I haven't purchased a home and haven't begun to pay it off?
David Ray, let's put that question to you. Jennifer is 39 years old, makes $100,000. She's saving, together with her employer contribution, $10,000 to $14,000 a year. She doesn't own a home. Does this add up?
Well, my comment is that diversification includes more than just stocks and bonds. And a home purchase or owning real estate is also an important diversification. If you've got substantial assets in the stock market and in bonds and you're in good shape, that's a good thing. But you will provide some additional risk control, I think, if you diversify partially And home ownership is one good way to add some diversification to your overall retirement portfolio.
And Christian Weller, we're trying to get some real concrete understanding here tonight. Jennifer thinks she's in pretty good shape, on track for retirement. Do you agree?
I do agree and disagree. I think that the savings rate makes sense. I mean, it would be interesting to know when she started savings. I agree with David that there are some diversification issues here. However, I think the other problem we have to take into consideration is she has about 15, 20 years maybe to go for before she retires, maybe a little longer. The market can stay down. The stock market can stay down for long periods, especially for 20 years after such a crash as we have seen for the last, for the last 2 years. So the 401k plan exposes people to enormous risks, not only to making bad choices such as lack of diversification, but also that the market stays down for a long period of time. And if you consider that, I don't think she's that well prepared for the for any of those risks.
In other words, she could be saving even more than she is now.
I would say yes.
Matt's calling from Pardeeville, Wisconsin. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Hello, gentlemen. Really enjoy the show tonight.
Great.
My question is for the guest. I'm 24 years old. I make about $50,000 a year. My wife stays home with my three children, and I find it extremely hard to know where to put any money away, because after we pay our bills and our rent every month and try to put something away for the kids to go to college, there's not really much left for us. And we're really at our wits' end. I mean, my wife stays home with the kids, which we value a lot, but
understood.
It's just real hard. When you slice my salary in half, that would be like both of us making $25,000.
So it's easy to talk about packing a lot of money away, but you don't see where and how to do it.
Yeah, where does the money come from, or how do I get there so that we do have something when it's time to retire? So that, you know, it's good to put away now, but I don't foresee being able to do that, you know, with what I currently make.
Matt, let's get an answer, and thank you for your call. Christian Weller, what do you think of the situation? 24 years old, $50,000 a year, and doesn't know how to save for retirement.
I don't think that that's an atypical. I think that's a very typical situation. I think a lot of young people, especially, find themselves in this situation that really they have a hard time finding the additional income that's necessary to put away.
What's the answer?
Part of it is often just to look around and inform yourself about the options. I mean, if there's a 401k plan, even putting away $50 a week or even $100 a month will add up over a long period of time. I mean, the caller was, said 25 years old, so we're looking here at 40 years over which interest can accumulate on that. But really, I think that the main thing is informing yourself, what are the options? Does your employer offer a 401k plan? If not, there are the individual retirement accounts. It's possible that an employer actually offers a traditional pension benefit plan. Many people just simply don't know about that.
But there's no magic wand there. Matt, thanks for your call, and good luck to you. David Ray, final thought, and our time is running down. It really is a different retirement horizon that we're looking at now.
Right. I mean, it's a new world. And when Social Security was passed back in the 30s, people died before the typical person died before he or she was eligible. We're in a new kind of world. In this world, people are going to have to take charge of their retirement in savings and investing. They are not going to be able to rely on others.
In a big way. David Ray, president of Profit Sharing 401k Council of America, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
And Christian Weller, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR.